From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston.
Yep, today was the last day this one's open. That leaves me walking all the way up to the bridge in order to do even a basic transaction.
That voice you just heard was one of Bank of America's customers, Donna Winter, who was not happy when her local branch in Winthrop got shut down in July. It was one of a slew of bank branches that shuttered during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're joined now by WBUR investigative fellow Laura Craigle to hear more about how these closures create access problems for small businesses and lower income communities. So, Laura, when was the last time you walked into a bank? Because I don't think I've been to one since moving here.
Yeah. Well, I have been to a few recently as part of our reporting on the story, you know, popping into branches to see how busy they are and checking out whether they're offering full service or just the ATMs. But yeah, before we got to work on the story, it had been quite a long time since I had been to a bank. And I think that's the reality for a lot of people during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it's something that banks have taken as an opportunity to speed up their plans to invest more in online banking while simultaneously shutting down permanently at least 230 branches in neighborhoods all across Greater Boston and in towns all across the state.
Mm. So it sounds like my mobile banking is kind of contributing to a problem here. 230 sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty big number. And it's roughly 11% of all the state's branches that did get closed, we found out. Using federal data, we found that Bank of America, which is the biggest bank here in Massachusetts, shut down 39 branches. Citizens Bank and Santander, which are the number 2 and 3 banks, shut down 36 each. You know, geographically speaking, Boston had the most closures with 39, but others were shuttered, you know, New Bedford, Springfield, Brockton, Worcester, and beyond.
Got it. Are these permanent closures?
Yes. Those were all shut down for good, those 230. But in our reporting, we also found out that banks have closed branches, you know, temporarily, so to speak, due to staffers getting the virus maybe, or just the banks having a hard time hiring. Mm. Bank of America closed more than 20 branches on a temporary basis during COVID, but some of those closures ended up lasting more than 2 years. So it's this twofold issue, really, where customers' branches have gone away for good in many cases, but then there are customers who have been in these limbo situations where, you know, their branch is still there, but it's closed for this unclear period of time.
It sounds like the banks tried to do one of those pivots that a lot of businesses have done over the pandemic, where they discover a new way of operating that just seems to work a little better, but they didn't really think through the fact that, you know, some people like to walk into their branch and, you know, deal with a teller or maybe go to the ATM or something like that, you know? And I imagine it's quite an inconvenience for customers. You know, what do banks say about why they've closed so many locations? And what kind of challenges does this all present for people trying to do their banking?
You're like spot on, Daryl. You know, we reached out to these big three banks and they all said that COVID has accelerated branch closures, you know, with customers more than ever turning to online and mobile banking during the pandemic. Just, you know, the health risks involved in going out to busy public places. A lot of people, even, you know, longtime holdouts, started getting just more and more comfortable, you know, depositing their checks using their phones with apps, as well as, you know, a number of other digital banking options. And so the banks say they're just investing more in technology because that's the way the world is going. And for some people, like it sounds like you, Daryl, you know, that's all well and good. Digital is great. And it's not a big problem that they don't have a physical branch nearby. But then there are these other customers, like you mentioned, for whom it's this really significant inconvenience. And it's something that can really limit their access to their money and to other financial services, especially in those certain cases, like older folks who are not as comfortable using technology maybe and who want to go do business in person with their teller. That's what they're used to. People who have limited access to the internet or for whom English is their second language. You know, all the city dwellers out there who rely on public transportation, you know, their branch closes. And now the closest alternative is, say, 20 extra minutes, multiple bus transfers away. And then, of course, there's also small businesses that deal in cash and are needing to make really frequent deposits, as well as just people who are out there who make less money. You know, we found that of all the branches that got closed in Massachusetts, a quarter of them had been in low and moderate income areas.
Mm. You know, and it's interesting because one of the reasons why I haven't been into a bank lately is because the bank that I use either doesn't have any or very many locations up here. So I just do everything mobily. And I'm assuming that kind of contributes to this idea of a trend that might let some of these companies think, okay, maybe we should start shuttering some of our banks as just general consumer habits change. You know, but what's the reaction from people who watch banks to ensure that they're being fair and equitable?
Yeah, it worries them for sure, the people who watch this issue, especially like you said, kind of once the ball gets rolling, the trend develops and it continues. So community development groups and others are concerned about the toll that this is going to take, that is already taking on neighborhoods and main streets out there, you know, when they lose a major branch, whether it be permanently or temporarily.
Because that's foot traffic you lose. You know,
it is.
If somebody just has to go to the bank, that's foot traffic that gets lost for businesses in the surrounding area.
And then when you close one location, another one gets busier. The lines are longer, maybe becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where then people feel like they can't go to that branch either. So absolutely, that's the case. And, you know, we spoke to Robert George. He's director of Roxbury Main Streets, which is this nonprofit that helps support local businesses in Roxbury here in Boston. And he was so frustrated throughout the pandemic because the Bank of America branch in Nubian Square was shut down for months, off and on, never sure when he's showing up. You know, is it going to be open? And when it is open, it had reduced services.
Now, I found it a bit strange because here in Nubian Square, Roxbury itself, it's a hub. I don't think they can show me any statistics claiming it's not heavily utilized. The bank is always busy.
And so Bank of America has said that that branch is now since reopened fully. But given how important it is to the community, George says it's really hard to have had that limited access when people were really trying to get back on track and dig out of all the challenges of the pandemic.
Right.
And because he says, you know, you cannot ignore the decades of history of redlining, you know, where banks failed to make loans and did not serve customers adequately in low and moderate income places like Roxbury.
It's about providing appropriate equity in services. When you see that history and you see this type of behavior, antennas go up again. Is this another way of marginalizing the community?
Interesting. So what happens next? Is this something that regulators are looking at?
Well, you know, bankers say that physical branches still have a role to play even in the current era. Citizens Bank, for instance, says that it has found people, especially younger people, are actually more likely to open an account if there is a nearby branch. They like having the option that they might need to go in person and speak to somebody.
Right.
And the banks also emphasize that they have opened some new branches during the pandemic, too, so it's not only closing locations. Once a bank has gathered deposits, it does have an obligation to provide services to those customers and to serve those communities under a law called the Community Reinvestment Act. But critics say that the oversight of this federal law is way too light. For example, these big national banks do not need any kind of approval to close a branch. They can just close it. So experts in this space are calling on federal banking regulators to take a look at this wave of closures, which is happening here in Massachusetts, but also across the country, and to really make sure that banks are not abandoning the communities that they're supposed to serve. And the regulators are already working on updating the CRA, given some of these modern changes to banking. And so we'll have to wait and see if they take up this particular issue of branch closures.
Got it. Laura, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing this. I am sure that, you know, the people listening really appreciate this. You know, it's something that you may not always think about if you're one of those mobile bankers or something like that, but this sounds like it really has a big negative impact on a lot of people. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Daryl.
That's WBUR investigative fellow Laura Craigle. And to close out today's show, we're bringing you another snippet from this year's WBUR Maker Series. Today's profile is brought to you by senior arts reporter Andrea Shea. Andrea profiled local motorcycle artist and mechanic Jay Shia, who builds elaborate art bikes using found materials as well as custom and vintage motorcycles out of her Boston-based shop, Madhouse Motors.
So my maker is Jay Shia. She's 32 years old, and she's a motorcycle builder, designer, and artist. Also mechanic. She comes from a long line of metal workers, fourth generation. Her family came over from Lebanon, so tinsmiths and mechanics. She didn't want to do that as a career, wanted to be a war photographer. She ended up discovering while doing oil changes in the backyard in the snow and the rain, she was invited to a show called Motorcycles as Art, and she had an epiphany.
These are kinetic moving sculptures.
Not only does she make these art bikes that we highlight in the series, she sees designing custom bikes, building bikes, fixing bikes, and the people that do them as fine art and fine artistry.
We're doing preliminary drawings, we're doing the design of it, we're deciding the composition, we're deciding the texture, the color palette, the storyline, and addressing it like an art piece, just the canvas is a little bit different.
What's kind of stuck with me after doing this reporting and after meeting Jay Shia is her resilience and her bravery and her willingness to take risks and do things differently. You know, there aren't a ton of women building motorcycles. She's carrying on her family's legacy, which is super cool. But I think it's just so great that she's not only able to pay her bills with this thriving, very busy shop, but then she's able to be an artist too.
Now I really love designing and building and coming to work and creating new things and having art be at the forefront of what I do instead of survival being at the forefront of a tire and an oil change.
You can find more from this year's Maker Series at WBUR.org. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Franny Monahan. Our show is mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vikas. Our editor is Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, you're a podcast listener, right? Would you like this show, along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region, all in a podcast feed? I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just a local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts and culture, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.